Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Kathy Kuhn.
Thank you, Adrian. Today's topic is tracing WebSphere's service integration bus for your own use. The presenters are Paul O'Donnell and Mohammed Naji. Paul has been with IBM for 14 years. During the first 7 years, he worked primarily as a consultant. The past 7 years, Paul has worked in Level 2 support covering the Service Integration Bus, WebSphere MQ, Virtual Enterprise, Intelligent Management, and Extreme Scale. Mohammed has worked for IBM for the past 11 years, supporting WebSphere MQ for 9 years, Service Integration Bus for 4 years, and WebSphere Extreme Scale and DataPower XC10 appliance for a year and a half. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
Thank you, Kathy. I'd also like to welcome everyone to the presentation today and let you know what our goal today is: to impart knowledge that will help you to develop confidence in tracing the service integration bus, which we're going to refer to throughout the presentation as the bus, or just as SIB. Slide 2, please. Before we get started with tracing, I will review some of the basics of SIB for anyone on the call who might be new. A reminder, though, this was advertised as intermediate, so there is some expectation that you have some background. And after I'm done, Mohammed will begin by discussing some of the tools that we use. Slide 3, please. And let's go right to slide 4, actually. Okay, here are some of the terms that we commonly use with SIB in Level 2 support. The bus is a group of interconnected objects. In this case, they're going to be servers, JVMs, clusters, MQ servers, and messaging engines. A messaging engine is a lightweight component that runs inside the JVM that does the actual work of handling the messages and storing them and forwarding them and so forth. The SIB service is the application that also handles part of what's going on, and the SIB service needs to be running for a messaging engine to start. Take note of that. Frequently, we'll hear the term destination or queue or topic, and these are all pointers. A destination is a type of a pointer, or there's a couple of types of pointers that are destinations. There are queues, there's topics, and your JMS application will reference a destination, or another application can reference a destination. And the actual data, the actual messages, will be stored elsewhere. And we call the place where they're stored a message point. And again, there can be a few different types of message point. We also have message stores. Every messaging engine has to have its own message store. And message stores come in two types, either a data store or a file store. A data store uses JDBC, and it also requires a commercial database like DB2. So if you want to access DB2, you would set up a data store. The default is to use a file store. And a file store makes use of three flash files, whose internal format is kind of proprietary to IBM. Slide 5, please. Okay, this diagram shows the SIB topology. And you can see that we have a cell, and within the cell there's a bus. The bus has three members: server 2, server 3, and cluster A. And notice that each one of the servers also has a messaging engine, and each messaging engine has its own either file store or data store. Now, when the messaging engine starts up, one of the first things it does is goes out and connects to that file store or the data store. And if it can't do that, then it won't start. Okay. Slide 6, please. Here we have the JMS API programming model, and this should probably be familiar to most of you. One thing to note is that the applications that run will connect directly to a messaging engine, and you can see in here the solid line is the path that the data actually follows. The dotted line shows you the JMS path, as it's pointing toward the port. I'm sorry, it's pointing towards the destinations, which actually just redirect to the message points where the data is actually stored.
To Muhammad.
I'm going to slide 70. Okay. So prior to delving into traces, we thought it would be a good idea to first walk you through about a couple of tools that are available out there for those who are or will be interested in reviewing the data themselves prior to engaging IBM. I will briefly talk about the IBM Support Assistant for Data Collection, ISADC or ISADC, and the WAS Trace Analyzer. As the name suggests, these tools can be used to collect the data that can include traces of the issue and to review those traces respectively. Slide 8, please. Okay. The collector data, the ISADC tool, is now embedded in WAS 8.5 and later. It is basically an interactive way to collect the diagnostic data for a particular component. It comes in two flavors, in a web-based one, and you can launch it through a command line. Look into a directory called the ISADC under your WAS root directory. If collecting data from SIB issues, select connectors components, and then JMS problem. I think we have included a screenshot on that. Move on to slide 9, please. This is the CMD version of the tool. Move on to slide 10, please. And this is the web-based version. Move on to slide 11. Now the second tool was Trace Analyzer. Move on to slide 12. Okay, the Trace Analyzer is provided by IBM as is product and can be downloaded directly from the URL shown here. This is what most IBMers use internally to review traces. Go on to slide 13, please. This is a screenshot of the tool showing its search engine. Going to slide 14. Here are the most common features used in the tool. For example, you can list calls by the thread ID. You can narrow your search as you go. And I think that is a useful feature in any search engine you may use. Move on to slide 15. Here you can see a tab, and the tab is shown for each filter you created. Move on to slide 16. The two bottom panels shows a tab for each search result and each stack you requested to review. Go on to slide 17. Okay, so preparing for WAS tracing. Slide 18, please. We start with a quick run of what WAS tracing is. Obviously, useful traces are the ones that recorded the issue. Few things to consider when dealing with tracing. First, most wall trace groups are expensive to use from a performance perspective in a heavily loaded environment, usually the case for production environment. Now, if the issue can be recreated in dev environment, most trace groups can be used. Having too much is better than not having enough. So in production environment, however, we tend to suggest the minimum trace groups. And in some cases, and after much diagnostics, we may even trace a particular class. After, trace file size is very important. There have been many occasions where we had to ask customers to retrace the issue after increasing their trace file sizes and the number of historical files for the obvious reasons. Slide 19. Okay, this is an example of size of 50 each file for a number, 50 megabytes size of for each file and a number of 10 historical files. So you end up with 10 historical files with each of maximum of 50 megabytes. These settings work for most situations. So in this example, more than 500 megabytes of space should be allocated for traces. We're going on to slide 20. Like systemout.log file, systemerror.log, and so on. Slide 21. If trace specifications are put in the configuration tab here, as shown in the screenshot from the admin console, server restart is required in order for the trace to be applied. In the runtime tab, it is applied as soon as you click apply or OK button. I think most of you know this, but it's worth mentioning. Slide 22, please. We recommend 50 megabytes for and about 10 historical files, but we sometimes ask for a size of up to 100 megabytes and maybe even and up to 20 historical files. So customer needs to make sure that all data that is obviously irrelevant to the issue should be cleared before sending the whole thing to IBM. Time gets wasted on uploading, downloading, and scanning to such data. Our enhanced customer data repository, ECU rep, is what customers use to send their data and to get fixes and documents from IBM. Moving on to slide 23. Let's start talking about SIB trace strings. You may hear different terms for this, by the way, such as trace groups, trace specifications, or trace hooks. So moving on to slide 24. In the next slide, almost all SIB traces groups are mentioned. We included them here for your future reference in case you get to use them. In the example here, SIB security equal all traces all bus security related activities. And the SIB JMS star equal all is used when the client is local to the ME and it records all the JMS and related resource adapter activities. I'll touch on that later. But the trace specifications are case sensitive. So note the colon in between trace groups. If no trace has been applied here, the default is always star equal info. Moving on to slide 25. Okay, whether you plan to do the initial review yourself or get IBM involved, visiting this SIB must-gather URL should be your very first step. Moving on to slide 26. As I said before, this and the next four slides, so a total of five slides, are here for your reference. If we see customers interested in having sessions such as this one, we will be willing to cover a few more of the trace groups with examples in the future. So moving on to 27. Slide 27, it's like I said, the first one, and this is the second, and we have a few more with all the trace groups that SIB uses. Moving to slide 28. Slide 29. Slide 30. Okay. So now going to slide 31. Okay. Now in the next few slides, we will discuss the JFAT channel API calls and how communication is established between the client and the messaging engine. And this is the core of our representation. Besides tracing messages and tracing SIB database interaction. Moving to slide 32, please. Okay, let's see the picture first to clearly see what layer we will be looking at in the crate. Here we have our client at the bottom of the picture, ultimately gets attached to its intended SIB destination, which is localized by this ME at the top. See the communication layers here. The TCP as the main protocol in this example. Channel framework that implements the transport channel service, which is a major component of WAS. The JFAT channel, the layer that provides the inbound and outbound channels in respect to the ME. And you have the SIP communications layer, which is the low level layer that implements communications to the ME. Moving to slide 33. So slide 33, we traced our JMS client application that creates a physical connection, creates a producer, sends a few messages, in this case three messages, and closes the session and then the connection. Our client runs outside the JVM where the ME is hosted. So to the ME, the client is not local. To track the JFAT channel and onwards up to the ME, we use the two traces or the two trace hooks listed at the bottom of the slide. Moving to slide 34, please. Okay, slide 34. So again, we will be using the JFAT trace to trace the JFAT exchange that is tracking physical connection and its details, conversations, and requests. And the SIP comes to track communications between the JFAT channel and the ME. Moving on to slide 35. Here's just more insight on what those hooks reveal when used for tracing. To iterate what I have said before about how the client and ME interact, the ME always sees the client as a local client. As such, when the ME is local to the client, there will be no JFAT calls, but only SIP cons calls. In that case, you don't see or you don't need JFAT trace, but JMS and RA trace. But in this case, the ME is not local, so this is the reason why we're using JFAT channel trace. Moving on to slide 36. Here we just loaded the client trace file onto the WAS trace analyzer. The best string to start out your search is SEG, capital S, capital E, capital G, underscore. All hits you get are information exchanges, which include commands between the client and the ME in order to establish a connection, create or a close producer or consumer session, and then send a message, get a response back, and close the connection. Most of these commands do what the name suggests. So, for instance, expect your you should expect your first hit to be like a seg underscore handshake and seg underscore create producer underscore says when a producer session is getting created. Moving to slide 37, please. Okay. So here we are tracking the creation of a session. If the issue is a session-related issue, for example. But before session comes connection. Look for the JFAP summary in between brackets, and you'll see the physical connection just got created. A physical connection basically comprises of two sockets, and each socket comprises of a combination of an IP address and a port number. The first socket is at the client side. So the first IP, 9.67.164.108, is the IP of the host where the client is running. Port in red is the port number used by the client on the client side. Port in green is the port used by the client on the server side, which is in this case just the SIB underscore endpoint underscore address port. And 7276 happens to be the default here. Both IPs here are the same simply because the client and server are running on the same machine. But they could be different if they're running on different machines. Now, in the second entry, the number one in blue in the conversation is the conversation ID. The ID number for the next conversation number, if there's ever another conversation, under the same connection will be incremented by one. So you get conversation ID 1, 2, 3, and so on. But in this trace, simple trace, we only had one, so ID number 1. Also the number 5 in orange is the request number within the same conversation. Request number gets incremented as well here, as long as it's within the same conversation. So this is, as the number suggests, this is the fifth request in the trace. In the first entry, notice the double colons and then minus one. That indicates a conversation has not been created just yet. Moving to slide 38, please. Okay. Following along with request 5 under conversation number 1, looking at the four entries here, see how the request to create a session is submitted to the ME. And notice the CRED number 36. Also note the word exchange, exchange, segment, etc. in the first entry. This is an indication that the client is expecting a response back. In this case, getting a response makes a total sense. In contrast, if the client sends, let's say, a best effort non-persistent message, and there is a message that the user can afford to lose, you wouldn't see the word exchange in that request as it is in this one. So the request has made it to the server under thread 36, and then actually thread 36 on the client side. And then the response gets dispatched over to thread 36, still on the client side. So when the server has sent back the response, we'll go over that in the later slide. So notice the R appended to seg create producer sesh in the last entry. That means that the client has actually received a response, which is a good thing. Moving on to slide 39, please. Okay, after uploading the server trace where the ME is running, start your search using the work RCV. Now, notice now we're on the server side. We're no longer we just uploaded the trace on the server side. Start your search using the word RCV to see what the ME has actually received from the client. The more complex the environment is, the more hits you get for sending three consecutive small messages, in this case, I got only 31 hits. So you can just imagine if you're sending 1,000 messages. Then within the search results, look for method call named by RCV create order context to confirm the connection creation on the server side. You can expect to see error in this area if the issue is a connection issue. By the way, on client side, colon false indicates that this is a trace on the ME side. But on the client side, it was showing false, if we are on the client side, actually. Moving on to slide 40. Okay, this is a screenshot of the trace tool showing the searches I made. Moving to slide 41. Okay, another screenshot showing stack of a particular function that I was interested in and so on. Moving on to slide 42. So on slide 42, still on the ME side, you can track a request or even the whole conversation as shown in this slide. Moving on to slide 43. Okay, here for that particular request of creating a session by the client, we can see the request on the server side this time and the thread BF. The response of that request was then dispatched to thread C2. And sent back to the client. Remember thread 39 on the client side receiving the response. And as you can see, you may be required to go back and forth between client and server traces to track anything you want really, any seg commands. Now moving on to slide 44. Okay, a client is local to the ME if the client runs inside, if the client is deployed inside the JVM where the ME is running. In our case, our client was not, although it was running the same box. So in the case where the client is local to the ME, don't expect to see JFAP activities, but instead a bunch of JMS and resource adapter calls. And if that's the case, then you ought to use a different trace. Moving on to slide 45. Now, if the session is successfully created, the SIBCOMS trace should allow you to see if the intended destination has been resolved by queue name. In my example here, my queue name was successfully resolved, and that is QNAJ01 in this case. So the SIP communication layer uses this class called comms byte buffer to send or receive data between the client and the ME. And the class called static cat producer deals with the format and protocol used by the message producers. So just to give you an idea, if you're looking for these classes and you see exceptions around these area of code, you just can at least expect that this is a format and protocol issue when you see such exceptions around static cat producers and so on. So moving on to slide 46. So here, Paul will start talking about tracing messages. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Mohammed. Slide 48, please. I'm sorry, slide 47. So over the next few slides, I'll be discussing how to trace messages that are traveling from a local messaging engine over a pub-sub bridge to a messaging engine on another bus. Slide 48, please. So I'll tell you a little bit about my environment first. My test environment consists of three JVMs, PubSub Server 1, PubSub Server 2, and PubSub Server 3. I will refer to them as PS1, PS2, and PS3, respectively. My publisher application publishes a message on PS1, which is then forwarded through PS2, which is my PubSub bridge, to PS3. On PS3, the subscriber application prints a message in the systemout.log file. Now, because the trace string includes SIP processor, it's going to produce a lot of data. Let me take a minute and talk about SIP processor. The SIP has many components. It's a very large piece of WAS. And the processor is by far the largest piece. And there's a lot of overlap there with some of the other trace strings you might notice over time. I did some testing once on a different project and found that for each message that I sent, if I had SIP processor enabled, it added 1,000 lines to the trace file. So it covers quite a bit. And there's actually some overlap here that we're going to discuss in a minute. Okay, so when you are doing testing internally at your businesses and you want to use the processor, which is a good thing to use, it's recommended to test with a small number of messages. Slide 49, please. Okay, to capture the message, when it's first published, we turn on SIP message trace and look for user trace messages. All of the user trace messages also have the code CWSJU. Now, when Mohammed was presenting, he covered 5 pages of message prefix codes that also included a recommended search string to use. And the one for CWSJU in that chart was SIP processor, and that will work. But if you can also use the SIP message trace, which is has a much smaller impact on the size of your trace file and the performance hit that you might take by using trace. Okay, so what these user trace messages tell us what's going on with a message. And one of the most important things that you'll find in them is something called the system message ID. Now, on the chart here, you'll see where it says sample system message ID, and then it's got in red the message ID here. Now, this has two parts. The left side is the ID number for the messaging engine where the message is coming from. And the right side is a tick number, or sometimes called a sequence number. So the sending and receiving side have to have the same tick number to stay in sequence. Okay, so let's see. Slide 50, please. So I just tested with one message, and I copied to the screen here the messages that I felt were most important for our presentation today. Now, it's also important to know that the system message ID is going to be used by all of the WAS code that accesses these messages. So you'll see the same code number, and this is what allows you to track the message from one location to another. So in the red here, I have the system message ID. I also have the destination name, which is JS Monitor Topic Space. And in purple here, you'll see, and I'm looking at the first message, by the top part. It says that correlation ID is null and transmitting to messaging engine with ID, and then it gives the name. And this is PubSub Server 2. And this is on my GEMS bus. This is the bridge, so the message is going to go through here to PubSub Server 3 or PS3. Okay, so now the second part we see something that's very important. In the green, it says PubSub Output Handler. Now, if you're not using PubSub, this would be point-to-point output handler. This is part of the code that communicates messages from one messaging engine to another. And you can see the actual text of the message that it's going to be sending here, where it says my message equal sign and the number one. That's what we printed in the system out log file on PS3. So these messages identify the destination and the messaging engine where it is located. So you can look for these in your traces. So you can look for the CWSJU0021 and start pulling up messages that look like this. And this is if you have SIB message trace on or the SIB processor. If you have space and time, it's not, and performance is not an issue, I would recommend using SIB processor because you'll learn a lot just by studying the code too. Slide 51, please. Okay, so in the first message, we see that a message with a correct system message ID was received and for the correct destination. And the PubSub output handler picks up the message again here, and that's what's going on. This is on PS2, of course. Okay, slide 52, please. On PS3, we see that a connection was made to PS2 and for the destination that our message is supposed to go to. Next, the message with the correct system message ID is received, and finally, the message is consumed by the subscriber and the message printed. So once again, we see how the system message ID, the same number, we're able to use that to track the message from one location to another, one messaging engine to another. Slide 53, please. We'll now discuss SIB database interaction. Okay, as I mentioned in the beginning, I'll just review that every messaging engine has a message store, and it can be either a data store, which is a commercial database, or a file store, which is three flat files. Slide 55, please. Data stores. Okay, an important part of tracing message stores is capturing what happens when they start up. To do that, enter your trace string on the configuration tab. Now, you saw that screen that Muhammad went over. It had the configuration tab and the runtime tab. Anything that goes on the configuration tab gets executed at the beginning of the startup of the messaging engine. So it will capture, well, so let me go back a bit. When the message engine starts, one of the first things it does is try and go out and connect with its message store. Now, each message store is going to have a unique message engine user ID number in it, and it goes out and checks for that. And if it's not there, it's not going to start. But this all happens at the very beginning. So if you want to capture any of that kind of activity for your messaging engine or anything else, put the trace string in the configuration tab. Okay, now once a messaging engine is up and it's accessing its data store, you know, you're going to be inserting messages, deleting messages, and so on. And that's all going to take place using SQL statements. So when you get your trace file, search for those SQL statements, and you'll start to see what's going on. Slide 56, please. Thank you. With file stores, we can just use the SIB message trace equals all string. And this is going to pull up the user trace messages once again. And that's what's being used there with the file store. There's no SQL because these are just flat files. Actually, how the internals of those files work, there's a document that Level 2 can send to you if you request it. It's very complex, but I just let you know that it's there if you want to look at it. Okay, so in this environment, what I did was I set up MQLink, and I put a test message to an MQ remote queue definition, which points to a destination on my WebSphere bus. And that queue forwards the message to a destination that is managed by the messaging engine that has a file store for its message store. Notice that I'm only looking for the user trace messages when tracing the file store. And from the user trace messages, I can see that a message was both put to the queue and committed successfully. You can see that in the green there. Let's go to slide 57, please. Okay. Now, what Mohammed and I have gone over today is enough to get you started in working with tracing the service integration bus on your own for your own purposes or your development work and debugging. And it's also really good for education so you can figure out what's going on underneath. So I'll give you a recommendation that was given to me by the team lead of SIB Level 3 when I was learning tracing the SIB, when I was learning to trace SIB. He gave me several different trace components, which are ones we've gone over today, by the way. And he had me start with just one, like I think the first one was SIB Communications. And then you say, you know, the SIB JFAP channel and then SIB JFAP summary. And then processor. And do a trace running each one of those individually and see, and do the same activity. Send one message through and see what it gives you. And then start combining them and see what you get. And it's a really good practice to develop your confidence and understanding in trace. It's also good to realize that everything we've gone over here also applies to everything else within WebSphere application server as far as tracing goes. What will be different is the trace strings. And the different must-gather sites on IBM's website will give you a lot of different trace strings that you can use on your own. And also those who work with HPEL can refine the trace strings even more. So, as I said, we pretty much scratched the surface today in our presentation. If you are interested in having a second presentation that goes into more depth or covers specific topics within tracing SIB, send an email to Mohammed and myself, and we'll look into doing that. So I'll now turn the time back to Kathy.
Now it's time to move on to the Q&A session.
And currently we have no questions in the queue.
We have no questions in the web conference either. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope that you will join us for a future presentation, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thank you very much for joining us today, and a special thank you to Paul and Mohammed for presenting today. You all have a great day.
Thank you.